You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, this is Jay Baer from Convince and Convert, author of the new book, Hug Your Haters. And one of the best ways to get your hands on this book and to see me speak is to register right now for Social Brand Forum 2016. Join me, Jenny Diedrich, Joe Palizzi, and more in Iowa City this fall. Register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Jason Keith. Jason thrives on ideas and inspiring others to build something new and to take chances. As the founder and CEO of Social Fresh Conference, he curates some of the smartest voices in online marketing. Graduating from UNC Charlotte with a fine arts degree, Jason's roots are firmly in the creative arts. Jason lives in New York City, where you can find him blogging from a local coffee shop or roaming the streets of Manhattan as a full-time tourist. Jason is a keynote speaker, presenting to thousands on digital marketing, creativity, and how to make organizations more innovative. Jason has consulted with Fortune 500 and Inc. 5000 companies on social media strategy and development. He is routinely quoted by media in the New York Times, USA Today, MSNBC, the LA Times, Ad Age, the Washington Post, and other outlets. Jason is the editor of socialfresh.com, where Social Fresh Conference shares free social marketing tips. He is also co-host of the Social Toolkit podcast, and each week, Jason publishes the Social Fresh Tip, a social media email newsletter. Jason, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you for having me, Nick. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
That is great. So there was a whole lot of social and freshness going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of everything in there. maybe a little bit too much. I should stop doing as much as I do, probably.
You know, I was asked for a 2-sentence bio today, and I'm like, you know, it should be the only one. The other stuff, you end up writing to a certain length.
That's a Twitter bio.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, and I looked at it, and I'm like, this is enough of me. Anything else? But I think
it's a challenge to do that. I love finding really funny and memorable Twitter bios. My favorite that I've ever found was all it said was, "This is me in a nutshell, comma, help, I'm trapped in a nutshell." I don't know if they stole it, but it was just I remember every.
Well, the sourcing that I would think of with that would be I think that's from an Austin Powers movie, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's from it. It felt very familiar, but it was still on point.
But I like it. I like it. I like it. Well, you can curate content. Segue alert. because you know, as in reading your bio, though, bios still are informative, educational pieces. But it talked about in the second sentence of your bio, talked about curating some of the smartest voices in online marketing. And I think that, you know, almost more than anyone else in our space, that's something that you are really known for. And I think, you know, as you go through like your checklist of you know, marketing tools, you know, you talk about curation. And too often we think of it just in kind of like grabbing and sharing links. But yes. I mean, you're doing that in mass, in speaker conference sized increments.
Yeah. I mean, the conference itself is just a big curation piece of content. It's true. And it takes a lot of time to really hone that skill and learn kind of the intricacies of it. And it's taken me a long time. Our first conference I started planning in 2008. And, you know, my curation there was basically, here's the people I know that are smart, and putting them on stage and putting them on panels and, you know, trying to think of the best topics and things I could get people to speak on. But it's gotten a lot more complicated since then. And it's very interesting. It's very intricate. And, you know, I think it comes down to really just knowing your audience and paying attention to what really benefits them. And that's, you know, the simplest version of that equation.
So how do you, I mean, I like that idea of, you know, paying to your attention to your audience and making sure you're providing value for them. It's a bit of a dumb question, but how do you do that?
No, I don't think it's a dumb question at all, because I don't think most people, when they're producing content on any scale, whether it's a blog or a Twitter feed or a podcast like this, which is great, I love your show, a conference is kind of a larger version of this. I don't think a lot of people really think through that strategically. And I know I didn't when I originally, I mean, I think I made some good instinctual decisions, but I didn't really think through of, okay, here's where people are. I mean, my initial decision to start a conference was based on this a little bit. So to help me, I started a conference because I saw that there was kind of a trust gap, which was caused by an education gap in social media. There was a lot of, I was in agency world. I eventually started my own social media agency and sold it, and then kind of was doing some consulting for social marketing. And all throughout that whole journey, I was getting people to ask me to pitch them strategies and tactics and campaigns for social media. But the conversion on those was very low. Compared to traditional agency products, websites, campaigns, et cetera, the conversion was very low. So people were very interested. There was a high interest level. Oh, what's MySpace? Oh, what's YouTube? Oh, what's Facebook? I really need to learn about this, right? But then when you put a campaign in front of them, there wasn't a trust in that. So I was like, all right, I'll do a conference and that'll educate people and show them great examples. So I think that was a good initial just instinct to start in that direction. And I think if you continue that till today, the way we do that today is we talk to our customers. So we don't have, Social Fresh is a small company. I think we do a really great job with the resources we have, but we don't have a ton of people. We don't have a big budget to go out and do big research projects. So we just simply pick up the phone and call customers on a regular basis and ask them, you know, what are your pain points? The last Social Fresh conference you attended, what were your biggest kind of wins that you took back and really improved your business? If you were to go to the next Social Fresh conference, what would be the deciding factors to get you there? And questions like that. That's not everything we ask. Those aren't the questions we ask every time. But you ask questions that kind of get to the heart of, is this piece of content that is important to your business or for us is our business, is it really helping the end consumer that you're doing it for? The more consistently you ask those questions, the better that product should get if you're listening to the information.
Well, I mean, I do think it's one of those things that it's easy to give lip service to, but much harder to actually practice in reality.
Yeah, totally. I think, I think you have to be realistic. You know, you can't, I mean, our conference has gotten so much better year after year. You know, what it is today is light years compared to what it was, seven years ago. So I think you have to be realistic and you have to be, kind of comfortable with the small wins and the slow evolution of a product or of a content strategy or a social media strategy, whatever it is. You can start very simply and just keep getting better. I think that's how you start a podcast. You know, a lot of people don't start podcasts because they're afraid they can't do it well. If you just start it, I mean, if you listen to the first episodes of Social Toolkit, they were terrible. I think the first couple ones, I had the wrong mic selected in our recording, you know, like it was just not technically very sound, but we've gotten a lot better at it.
It's funny. I just checked the mic selection as we were starting because that's like the podcasting paranoia there.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
But I also like your idea too of just starting, because I think that too often we wait for this idea of perfection that we'll be ready to do XYZ, to start the podcast, to host the event. And especially if you're serving a need, I think that you'll learn so much more by starting earlier to see how closely you can meet that need and what adjustments you might need to make as well.
Well, I think, yeah, you got to get moving, because you learn more by moving than you learn from watching, right? So, the podcasting example, you can look at a list of things that you should double check when you're podcasting. I can give you a list of things you should double check when you're creating a conference from scratch. But when you start doing it, you really learn which things matter the most, right? And you kind of learn that priority and you learn where your attention is best heralded. So I think the lessons of, you know, the the mindset of failing and learning from failing holds true, but I think it's more just doing. The lessons of doing are much more visceral.
It's a really great point. And, you know, you talked about kind of the bigger picture, too, in all of this of, you know, really building a brand very different. I mean, I think that marketing education has grown exponentially over the past decade. I don't know if I've ever really thought about it as much until right now. But I mean, obviously, with the rapid shifts in media and technology, you know, we've needed to do that to meet that need that you mentioned. But I also think it's an interesting way to kind of build your brand and kind of the stories that you build your brand around is kind of being an education source as well.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever explicitly had like a branding, kind of guidelines for Social Fresh or what we're doing. But it's always been important to me. I mean, I come from an art background. I got a BFA in art, focused on design and photography and painting. That's always been very important to me. You know, words are very important to me. I'm a writer. So, you know, picking out the name of the company, picking out the colors of the company, the symbols, the designs, have always been important. And then, you know, making sure there's a translation from those more aesthetic elements of a brand to the actual, you know, purpose of the brand. You know, for us, Social Fresh is a very literal name for us. We try to bring kind of the latest and greatest next what's happening. You know, our report that we just came out with, our first original piece of research, is called The Future of Social Marketing for a reason, because that's kind of what we represent as a brand, is trying to communicate that for people, what's coming next in this digital space and how they can best, use that for their business. So, you know, we are an education company, but we have, you know, a very firm purpose in what we're there for. And we try to translate that to, you know, all the small decisions each day. And I think that ultimately those build up and really are noticed, hopefully.
Well, I love all the different points in there, from the name to the conference to the research. And I think it's interesting, especially for marketing brands. You know, we had Jay Baer on a couple of months ago, and you talk about learning more from doing. And it's I had never heard the background on the Convince and Convert name either. And, you know, it's interesting because he kind of grew the business in a different direction that he thought was going to be much more kind of like conversion optimization focused.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the meaning kind of grew and evolved and adapted along with. And I'd assume that about the Social Fresh name, but I love hearing those stories just as part of this discussion as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, a good story for us is I bought the Social Fresh website before I ever knew I was going to do a social media conference. So
was it one of those brand names that you liked that us creative
sort of
types have, and it's just we own too many domains probably?
Yeah, I mean, I have several domains that I love, and it was sort of like that. I actually wanted, and I'm glad it worked out the way it did, I actually wanted freshsocial.com, and it was unavailable. So I was like, all right, let's see if Social Fresh is available. It was available. I got it. I actually wasn't in love with it at the time, but I held on to it. I thought it was good enough to like keep. And then, you know, and over the next 6 months, the conference idea came along, and I just pulled up my domains and saw which ones fit best. And that was by far the best fit. So we just ran with it, and it stuck, you know. So I think sometimes it is the, you know, the cart before the horse. Sometimes you, your name or your small decisions in the beginning, whether they're well done or not, have a larger impact down the road on where the business is going to go. And sometimes you adjust them completely. You know, Convince and Convert, I think, was kind of vague enough and innocuous enough of a name that it could kind of flow with what Jay's done. So I think that works well for him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's interesting too, you know, coming off of the kind of naming and visual pieces of that, and kind of that bigger mission that you were talking about, that, you know, the name touches upon with, you know, the fresh insights. And, you know, as I, you know, track back through the aforementioned bio, you know, whether it's, you know, in small email tips and podcast tips in a little bit larger form and in blog posts and, you know, obviously conference events, but research has been a very big part of, you know, what you've been working on too. And a big, big development too. I mean, that's a huge commitment resource wise.
It is. It is. And we had some great partners, Firebrand Group out of New York and Simply Measured, who's a great social media software listing company, were there with us. But it was fast and furious. We knew we wanted to get it out and get it out quickly. It was, you know, we got some great data. We interviewed 551 social marketers. And honestly, it was more data than we could report on. I eventually just had to stop, and you know, I could have just spent time in the spreadsheets for another month, probably finding interesting insights. But you have to cut off somewhere, and we had plenty of useful data for folks to see, and I'm really proud of it. It was a awesome report. We've had tons of coverage of it, tons of great response, and I think it's pretty useful. I mean, I think it's basically a benchmarking study of where people's time and resources are today in social media and content marketing, and where they're going to be over the next year. And this will be the first of what should be an annual report. We're looking forward to doing it again next year, and it's been fun.
So, in looking at all of the different data studies that are out there, what would you say is kind of the elevator pitch of this one? What makes it different in what it contains or how it's presented?
Yeah, well, we try not to get too we didn't cast a super wide net. You know, we weren't trying to capture, you know, everything about podcasting and webinars and Reddit and everything else. We didn't even include things like Google Plus in the answer options because, you know, for us, Google Plus works for maybe 1 out of 100 people I talk to when it comes to our customer base. So we focused on what we thought were the most important things, and we focused on budget and resources where possible. So where are people spending their time, their personnel, their money when it comes to which social networks they're on, which content pieces they're creating, and tried to give people very simple metrics. So one of the things I love about social network measurement is having a monthly active user number for Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, et cetera. It gives you a great simple metric that tells you how active these social networks are. So I wanted similar metrics for like what types of content people are creating. So we asked that question. We asked people, what type of content are you creating at least once a month? And we gave them, you know, like, I think 15, 20 different options. And we found some really insightful things. Like number one is images, which is pretty easy to guess. Like 80% of social marketers are creating image content once a month at least, and probably a lot more often. Number two was blog post, which is probably easy to guess. And number three was video, which I would have never guessed that video was almost half of the people are creating video at least once a month. So that shows you how big that video trend is. And that's important to know kind of where your peers are spending their time and money. We also asked, you know, which types of content are bringing you the most ROI. ROI is probably the most consistent thing that we asked about. So it's very focused for the professional social marketer, the business owner that wants to know where their time and money are going to give them the best bang for their buck. And that's kind of, you know, both today and in the future.
Well, I mean, that's pretty darn actionable too. I mean, obviously with the focus on ROI, but how you can actually do something differently too.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a challenge to people. So, you know, Instagram is a big trend, right? And we saw that Instagram is, to put it very simply and to kind of shortcut the data a little bit, Instagram is third when it comes to resources today behind Twitter and Facebook. But when you talk about resources in the future, Instagram is second. So clearly Instagram is kind of surpassing Twitter in attention and user numbers and many levels. That doesn't mean everyone should go and get on Instagram even if it's not right for their business. But I think it challenges people to take a closer look at Instagram to see if it might be right for their business in one way or another.
Well, and I think that, you know, right now and down the road, that kind of duality is an important thing to help you look at that trend. And for folks like you and I that are looking at lots of this stuff, you know, it has been, you know, it seemed like there's been this surging of Instagram too as a place to be. Specifically with being a visual person with an art background, you know, what do you think of the opportunities that brands can take advantage of on Instagram?
Well, I think the benefit for most brands on Instagram right now is probably the advertising opportunity, because it's built on top of Facebook's ad platform, which is so advanced and mature, and just the targeting features are very well done. So I think starting from scratch, almost every business could benefit from Instagram ads, because it's a display ad opportunity. It's a retargeting opportunity. It's an opportunity in a lot of big ways. So even if you don't have a daily, weekly Instagram strategy, if you're having an ad campaign go out there and you're doing retargeting, or you're doing just a big display effort, you know, you look at Google, you look at Facebook. Those are the two big display opportunities, and you should start looking at Instagram, because I think there's a lot of great opportunity there for ads. When it comes to a regular content strategy, you know, it's probably the best engaged audience in social networking outside of Snapchat right now, and probably the most engagement for your time spent, I would say, compared to Facebook, compared to Twitter, compared to Snapchat. Across the averages, people are seeing better engagement there in a lot of ways. And I'd say, you know, the difference in content, one big difference of things that perform well there are just kind of DIY content, not necessarily as polished as you would put in, you know, a big ad campaign or something like that, but just trying to have a story told about your brand that's organic and kind of done from a first person and has a little bit of a DIY nature to it. That's what does best on that platform. Yeah. And increasingly video, coming back to the video trend.
Well, yeah, it seems like so many of these different things that you're talking about are connected, whether they're, you know, aspects, you know, whether it's the visual side, the video side, or network specific side, looking at Instagram and Snapchat, where the most engagement is. And, you know, it's a very obvious trend start to emerge.
Yeah, I mean, the trend of short video is just, the end of this year, all the way through next year, is going to become something most businesses are going to have to get better at, is creating short, engaging video. And it's a big learning curve, but you look at what the top three social networks are focusing on. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And they are all three highly focused on video. Instagram just relaunched their app, updated their app. They've got a whole video tab. They're stringing videos together now, short video clips. They extended the video length to 60 seconds. And if you want to go past 60 seconds, you can connect videos. Facebook and Instagram have allowed, just yesterday, I saw on Social Media Current, are now allowing video ads to go into their carousel ad platform, which is a very successful platform. You've got multiple ads next to each other in kind of a panel format. So that's another way they're stringing videos together. So, I mean, there's a lot going on with video. It's a little daunting for most businesses, but it is a big trend. We're seeing good ROI numbers for a lot of businesses there. It is also the biggest time suck when it comes to resource spend. But I think there's ways that you can get better at producing quick video, and it's something most businesses should be looking at and practicing moving forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and it's kind of connects back to, you know, learning by doing. And I think that, you know, what we were talking about before and just starting. And I think that short video is scary. You know, video has come a long way, and it used to be very much a medium about kind of perfecting these longer form stories. And, yeah. You know, it's the old adage of, if I had more time, I'd write you a shorter letter. And I think that having less time and having to do something even faster is a little bit scary.
I think video is scary for a lot of reasons. I mean, putting yourself in front of the camera is difficult. I think we all have a certain deterrence to that you have to overcome if you want to get in front of the camera. And you're right. There's a expectation of storyboarding and having a polished kind of narrative attached to your video. And I think that expectation is reducing. I think videos don't have to be polished anymore. I think the hardware is easier with iPhones and LED panels and better microphones. And even just using an iPhone to film a video is not a horrible thing for most brands these days. If you've built an expectation, if you're Tiffany or you're Red Bull, or, you know, if you built up a quality content expectation, there might be. But most businesses don't have that. And just putting yourself out there in new ways with a simple smartphone, with simple video apps, whether it's Snapchat or Periscope or Facebook Live, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to play around with video, experiment, and practice storytelling and getting better. Snapchat's probably the best at practicing storytelling because of the Snapchat story format. And I think it's really good for folks that want to learn how to get better at video, quick at video. I think that's a great opportunity.
Were there other surprises in the data that you found?
Well, one of the biggest interesting pieces of data that I had to really dig for, we asked people The simple first question was, have you seen positive ROI from your social media? And typically the biggest follow-up question I get to that is, how did I measure ROI for that question? I didn't measure ROI. We're asking each person to define it for themselves. So if you simply ask people to define it for themselves, we got a pretty big number for yes, which was 63%. It's interesting. Some people will think that's high. Some people think it's low. I think it's high. For 63% of people to believe that they have seen positive ROI from social media, I think it's a little inflated. I think most of those people could not pull out their Google Analytics and show you that they got a positive ROI. But they anecdotally know that they have. You know, they've talked to a customer. They've seen click-throughs. They've seen conversions. They've seen an email list. You know, whatever it is, they've put it together in their mind. And I trust that. I think that's good enough for most people. But we also, you know, 24% said they're not sure about seeing a positive ROI, and 12% said no. So 12% of people that took the survey are using social media marketing and they have not seen a return on it. So that you want to dig into that and what those numbers mean. You want to dig into the 24% not sure. And the biggest thing we saw, I mean, underlying all of that is the longer you've been doing social media, the more resources you have, both in personnel and budget, the more likely you were to have positive ROI, which makes sense. You know, experience, resources give you a better result. So that made sense. That made a lot of incremental. So in the U.S., you saw better results when you saw budgets, when you saw people with bigger teams, you saw a much higher percentage when it came to having a positive ROI and being able to see that. But the biggest actual correlation that we saw was software. So if you divide people, and this is really kind of dividing the audience between people that are not really investing a lot in social media or haven't really done it for very long, and people that are investing more and have been doing it for a little time. So if you are simply using social media software, 19 out of 20 social media software users saw a positive return. That's 95%, a positive return from their social media. While if you're not using social media software, just using native apps, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera, it's a coin flip. It's 50-50. So, I mean, that was the biggest gap in numbers that we saw, the biggest correlation that we saw. And I thought that was really interesting that simply, you know, social media software kind of saw that connection. It's not necessarily a causation, but it's telling you a story there that people that are getting serious about it are seeing a return.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, that you note talking about who can actually get out their Google Analytics and look at this as well. Or is it just kind of a story of confidence also?
I mean, I think a little bit. I think most marketers are making educated guesses. They're making assumptions. They're not tracking every single piece of the buyer journey, right? So you have to have faith in people that they know what they're doing with their business a little bit, but that they probably can't prove all of it. I think it's a simple enough question. Have you seen positive ROI from social media? That I trust most people's answers, especially since 24% said not sure. And a lot of what we saw from the not sure were people that were not tracking, sales or lead capture as one of their main two goals for social media. So they're looking at customer loyalty or awareness or customer service as one of their main goals. So it's harder for them to track a hard conversion, right? So the ROI equation is much more complex. So yeah, I mean, those are one of the surprising things. Another surprising thing that we saw was LinkedIn advertising still has a committed, solid audience. It's mostly B2B folks. It's mostly people with a higher product purchase price. A lot of SaaS companies are in there, but 10% of people said that LinkedIn ads was their number one social ad platform when it came to the return on investment. So there were a lot of little successes like that we discovered in the survey, where there's small audiences where, you know, Pinterest is working for this type of company, or Instagram is working for this type, or LinkedIn ads are working for something else. And it's not a majority, and it's not necessarily growing rapidly, but it's there, it exists, and it really works for a certain type of company. Those were cool to see.
That is interesting. You know, every time you want to count LinkedIn out, it can really deliver, it seems, but for very, very specific reasons and in very specific ways too.
I mean, I love LinkedIn. I think they continue to innovate. I think they've got a lot of opportunity that's untapped. You know, they're not really a social network where people go and consume a stream of content. There are people that do that on LinkedIn, but for the vast majority of folks, that's not the case. They have kind of reinvented themselves, and they have a blogging platform now that gets pretty good traffic. And I think that's a great opportunity. And if you are a SaaS company, or if you are looking at SlideShare, they do have opportunities where the advertising is really powerful.
So what else in terms of looking ahead, if, you know, we always kind of start to wrap up, one of our two wrap-up questions is kind of if someone could focus on one thing, and I think that's a kind of an interesting pivot coming off of all of the data. If, you know, I'm a busy, overwhelmed marketer, as many are, and I could only focus on one thing, what would that one thing be?
If you had to focus on one thing, I would probably point you in the direction of Facebook advertising. I think that is the strongest category that we saw. I mean, Facebook in general just, you know, dominated every question we asked, right? When we asked where people are spending their time, where they're putting their money, where they're investing in the future, Facebook was number one, sometimes as much as 95, 98%. And when we asked for social ads, Facebook was number one as well. I think it was like 75, 76% of people that had to pick one social ad platform picked Facebook. And then another 6% picked Instagram, which is the Facebook ad platform. And I think Instagram, you're going to see quickly become the number two platform and start to take up a bigger chunk of Facebook's revenue than it does today. It's actually going to become, if they separated it out, it'll be one of the top like three or four mobile ad platforms on its own. But that being said, I think Facebook ads consistently perform for businesses that know what they're doing there. The targeting you cannot beat. If you want to drill down to a congressional district as a political candidate, if you want to drill down to a neighborhood as like an ice cream shop, even if you know that like there's a neighborhood 10 miles away that drives past your ice cream shop in the summer at this certain hour, like you can target down to so many levels of data. That it's super powerful. So I think that's an easy place where most businesses can see a pretty consistent return on their investment.
That's a great answer. You know, you can't beat the targeting capabilities. There's just not a need for the waste that there once was in advertising. I mean, I love the example of the, you know, the local business, a congressional district. It's that's a good one thing. Before we get to the brand that has made you smile, and I meant to mention this before we dove right in and talked about the research, and we'll link up to that in the show notes. But for those listening, where is an easy place to direct them to access the study?
Oh, the report's at socialfresh.com/future. So very easy to find, socialfresh.com/future. There's a free version of the report. There's also a paid walled version of the report. The free report is, there's a ton of data in there. And you can also just find, we're going to continue to blog about it. There's a lot of data on the Simply Measured blog, Firebrand Group. A lot of people have been writing about it, so you can find it all over.
Well, and I reference data all the time, and I'm glad to have a new source. And I'm actually, I also teach here at the University of Iowa, and am going to spend the summer not teaching, but rather tearing apart a lot of the data that I present in class, and I'm eager to make this a part of it.
Awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah. So, what is a brand that has made you smile recently, Jason Keith?
It's a good question. You know, I think one brand, and this is, you probably have this answer before, but I'd say Amazon is one that consistently impresses me, makes me happy. You know, when I was in New York, Amazon would deliver stuff to us same day. San Francisco, New York, you would get actual delivery people that would drop stuff off at your apartment or building, whatever it is, within sometimes hours of when you ordered it, which is amazing. And now, We split our time between New York and North Carolina, and I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina right now. And they're, just this week, we got our first same-day delivery in Charlotte from Amazon, which I thought was really cool. So, I mean, consistently, if you need to return something, if you need to, you know, get more information, if you need to make an edit to an order, if you, you know, their new Echo product, I think they consistently really make it easy for their customers, which I think is always a smile-worthy opportunity.
Well, and a great example of a brand that makes you smile. I don't think anyone has mentioned it recently, but there is literally a smile on the box. So
that's true. That's true. A to Z.
That's true also. Leave it to the visually astute Jason Keith. So beyond socialfresh.com/future, where should folks go to find out more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jason Keith. That's K-E-A-T-H. I think, you know, if you'd like to find more information about the conference, you can go to socialfreshconference.com. We've got a great lineup this August 18th to 21st in Orlando. We've got Mitch Joel and Peter Shankman and Spotify and The Weather Channel and Time Inc. It's going to be a great show. So you can find out more information about that. And Twitter is the best place to reach out to me. I mean, I'm always there. Always respond. Feel free to shoot me a tweet, and you can find all my links usually through that resource.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that and more in this week's show notes. Jason, thank you for being on brand with us.
Thanks, Nick. Always a pleasure. Keep doing great stuff.
Thank you. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. I want to give a shout out this week to Mac Collier of Blog Chat, who just hosted me as a guest on his amazing Twitter chat, talking about how brands can get scrappy with their blogging. Thanks, Mac. And a reminder, if you heard something on this episode or another that you liked, or have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about over at BrandDrivenDigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And finally, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. You can order now at Amazon and check out GetScrappyBook.com for special offers and digital extras. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.